Everybody, so in the last lecture today, as I told you, we have a brief outlook to also multiparticle systems, but this time where the number of particles is not fixed. So this is something completely new, because think about quantum mechanics with a wave function and a Schrödinger equation. You can of course treat multiparticle systems, but for every particle you have to have a coordinate in your wave function. And the number of coordinates is, of course, fixed. At any given time, it's the same. So until now, we had no possibility to describe, for example, the creation of new particles or the annihilation of particles. And yeah, from high energy experiments, from collider experiments, we know that this is essential. There's this famous relation, energy squared equal mass square, which essentially says that energy and mass can be converted into each other. And yeah, one of the goals, of course, is to describe this in a quantum mechanical or quantum theory sense. I think I also mentioned that in quantum mechanics, and this is why I do it not very extensively, this is not wrong and probably also useful, but it's more constructed. While in quantum field theory, when you quantize fields, it comes out automatically. So again, my recommendation, if you really want to learn something about multiparticle systems, about fermions and bosons, which are indistinguishable, and creation and annihilation, visit quantum field theory. And once you have seen quantum field theory, it's a very, very easy step back to quantum mechanics, what we are doing today. And you also understand why this is working and where it comes from. Okay, so yeah, section 6.3, that's an outlook, it's a complete treatment. Systems with varying particle number. So the first two items after the caption I already told you a minute ago. I would say one of the most essential things is the space of states. And the space of states is called typically Fock space or Fockraum of Deutsch. Whenever you hear this, this is a set of basis states where with different particle numbers, with no particles, one particle, two particles, and so on. And it's not difficult how this space can be constructed. We start with something we know. Start with a basis of 1 particle states. The most common choice is momentum eigenstates. Therefore, I already use the symbol k, but in principle, it can be any complete set of states. You could also take the harmonic oscillator and take all the energy eigenstates, or whatever thing is most appropriate or most convenient for you. Nevertheless, I would say in the majority of applications, and also when you do this straightforward in quantum field theory, the typical thing which is used are momentum eigenstates. Yeah, so e.g. Plane waves. And if you decide for this, then this letter k is equivalent to a momentum 3 vector. Here, in principle, we could also write down, of course, a wave function. It's, as you all know, a complex exponential e to the power of I kr. But we are not going to do this because when we work with wave functions, we cannot, as I said, describe transitions between particles. So for the full section, we stay in this rather abstract bra and ket notation. But think maybe always to have a clear example in mind about your plane wave states or momentum eigenstates, or whenever you would like to investigate a property of this one particle state, then you could take the wave function and do a calculation as you know with integrals, wave functions, Schrödinger equations, etc. So next item is just notation. Now, one particle is of course not sufficient. We introduce the notation k with an index j, and this is nothing else than the jth particle of our n particle system in the one particle state k, which was defined one line above. And now then you can immediately write down or define basis for an n particle system, and one notation, it's not the most convenient notation, so it's just introduced now for clarity, but once you understood what I'm going to tell you in 10 minutes, you can mostly forget what we are doing now. But still, one possibility is to write in this ket, all the momenta, and they are ordered as a list. And what it means is nothing else than k1, 1, k2, 2, and so on. So what this label for this state says is the first particle has momentum k1, the second particle has momentum k2, the third one has momentum k3, and so on, when we stick to this example of choosing plane waves. Or again, when you decide for a different set of bases, when you don't use, for example, k, but n, then this would mean the first particle is in the nth energy eigenstate, for example, of the harmonic oscillator. The second particle is in the n2th energy eigenstate of the harmonic oscillator, and so on. So just need to distinguish this index. This doesn't characterize the particle, it characterizes the state, and the ordering characterizes the particle index. So 2 degrees of freedom in this notation here. Don't mix them up. And of course, what we previously discussed in our multiparticle section, we also need to include, namely the symmetrization or anti-symmetrization for bosons or fermions. We are only discussing bosons, fermions are very similar. So since this is an outlook, I just made a decision. Consider bosons. And then we need the symmetrization. And this time we denote it by a letter capital S, and the symmetrization of our state, which we defined here, this multiparticle state, is as usual sum over all possible particle permutations, and then applying this permutation to k1, k2, and so on. And it's convenient. It's not a proper normalization for bosons, but still it's convenient to introduce a factor 1 over factorial n, roughly speaking, we sum over all permutations, and there are n factorial, many of them. So we divide by set number to have an expression of roughly equal size or magnitude for all possible particle numbers. First of all, I wanted to write J's particle, not J's, but this is probably not the question. When we have bosons, many bosons can be in the same state. It's not forbidden, right? So think about, this is the most simple example, are these plane waves inside a box. Then you have quantized momenta, a box, an infinite potential well. And when you have 10 particles or so, for example, 5 of them could be at rest, have zero momentum, exactly the same state. 2 of them could have 1 quantum of momenta in x direction, and the other 3 could have very high but different momenta. For fermions, it's a bit different. Then, of course, no two particles may be in the same state. But for fermions, we would need to write down, like on the right-hand side, not a symmetrization, but an anti-symmetrization prescription. And this would then give us a zero for such a state. So in a certain sense, the bosons are maybe a bit easier, even so a little bit contradictory to our daily life experience, because we are not used to have when we have macroscopic objects that they can be in the same place. But here it's not forbidden. Okay, so I hope this is clear, because now comes not a difficult thing, but still a slightly more complicated step towards a second notation, which is much more common in this type of multiparticle calculations. And it's called, I know the German word. It's Besetzungszahl Darstellung in English. Does anybody know particle number representation? Probably not correct. Occupation. Okay, it's a task for everybody to find out via Google the English word. Number. Occupation number? Okay.
Or absolute frequency for some reason.
No, this is never heard this. Let's stick with things when two of you say occupation number. Then let's use this. Sounds good. And not a full definition. I need to say more about it. Typically, you use the index n, because now n doesn't refer to the first particle, to the second particle, and so on. N rather counts how often a particle appears in a given state. It's exactly what you ask, basically. When, for example, 5 of your bosons are at rest in the ground state, then n0 would be 5. So each of the n's counts, or every possible one particle state has a n, and the n counts how many particles are in that state. So as I said, the first line is not a full definition. I need to say more, but let me write it down for a moment. N1, N2, and so on is now really a proper normalization, but it's not that important. We can discuss it at the end. And then nothing else than the S, the symmetrized version of our n-particle state is here. So basically what the equation says is that the states we defined before are also these new states with a slightly different labeling. And this labeling we need to define. And this is the next sentence where nk equal the number of particles in one particle state k. Yeah, let's do an example, I think, then becomes rather clear. Let's take, as I mentioned quite a number of times now, plane waves as one particle states. Let's consider 5 particles and 3 have momentum p and 2 have momentum q. Then we can denote the corresponding state psi in the following way. Either as defined here in a maybe simpler way, then as I mentioned, you can check that this is not a perfect normalization. I write just proportional. It means that for a fully correct result, you need to compute the normalization factor, but this is not the point here. If we have 3 particles in P and 2 in Q, we would need to write P, 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 Q, Q. So this is the notation of 358. And the occupation number version 359 would look like n p equals 3 n q equal 2. Where one could add that occupation numbers with value 0 are usually not written. Okay, now you could ask, why is the second version much better than the first version? Roughly speaking, it's half a meter on the board. And the answer is clear when you have maybe 1 million particles in the ground state, you would write in the second line, for example, n0 equal 1 million. And in the first case, you would have to write 1 million times whatever the vector 0. So clearly, when you are going to a large particle number, the first version is not appropriate, while the second version is very convenient. Therefore, in most applications, the occupation number notation or representation is the much better choice. And I think it's not very difficult to understand, but keep it in mind how it works. And yeah, this is what you find in most books, in most calculations. Yeah, now we are indeed in a position to write down the so-called Fock space, a space of states where the particle number is not fixed, where you can have 0, 1, 2, 3, and 4 particles, and so on. So those states in not this particular example, but I think you know what I mean. States which are denoted either in the first or in the second version. So states form a basis for systems with varying particle number, the so-called Fock space. Yeah, and the Fock space looks like this. You have a vacuum. Vacuum is typically a term for no particles. It's usually denoted by capital omega. All nk equals 0. The omega, because when you don't write any nk, you would have an empty ket, and this is not a good thing. Therefore, the symbol omega is used for the vacuum. Then you have one particle states in the occupation number notation. It's n1 equal 1, n2 equal 1, and so on. So again, keep in mind this index does not refer to the first or the second particle. It means that in the first state, in the first one particle state, we find one particle. In all other states, we don't find any particles. Or here, the only particle is in the second one particle state, and so on, and so on. So for every possible one particle state, we write a one, which is, of course, the set of all possible one particle states. Then, yeah, this is almost trivial. Now comes the interesting part. Two particle states, there are more combinations. We could have two particles in the state one, or we could have two particles in the state 2, and so on. But we could also have one particle in state 1 and the second particle in state 2, which would be denoted like this. Or you could have one particle in state 1 and one particle in state 3. And so on. So clearly the number drastically increases. Quite often you have anyway an infinite number of one particle states, but let's assume for a moment we would have a finite number of these one particle states, for example, capital N many, then We have a unique vacuum, of course, where we don't have a particle. We have n possible one-particle states. Here, it's a question regarding combinatorics, but it's probably something like n square over 2 possibilities, roughly. Then 3-particle states, I think we have already n to the power of 3 or proportional to the n power of 3. So you have more and more and more possibilities to write down appropriate states. And of course, this list can be continued. I think it's clear what a 3-particle state looks like. Either you have one occupation number equals 3, or you have 2 of them where one has 2, the other 1, or you have 3 different ones where each has a 1, and so on, and so on. And when you continue this list to an infinite number of particles, then I think it's clear that we have written down a basis, a full basis of states with any possible particle number. It's not energy eigenstates, typically, maybe not even an eigenstate to any of the operators you're interested in, but this does not matter. You have a basis. I mean, think about plane waves. Plane waves are also not eigenstates to your Hamilton operator unless you consider a free particle, but still they are quite useful. And basically, this is, I would say, the analog of plane waves at fixed particle number. So this is one of the most important concepts, is Fock space. So besides the Fock space, of course, the other thing we need to understand is how can we express operators acting on these states. This is what quantum theory is about. You need states and you need operators. And in particular, how can operators create or annihilate particles? So how can there be, for example, in time, a transition between a 2 and a 1 particle state or something like that. Therefore, the next and last section is particle creation and annihilation. And what we are, or what one does here, is define so-called creation operators A K dagger and annihilation operators A K, and I'm quite sure you have seen such operators before. Namely, in quantum mechanics 1, you solved the harmonic oscillator with creation and annihilation operators. And in my opinion, this was a very useless task in quantum mechanics, in one-particle quantum mechanics, but it immediately gets very helpful as an example to understand or to be reminded what creation and annihilation operators do, because what you learned for the harmonic oscillator is essentially identical now for the multiparticle states. Therefore, it's quite worthwhile to look back if you don't remember all these things today in the afternoon or in the holidays. Check this section about creation and annihilation operators, but what I write down, maybe you also remember, it was very, very similar. We define the creation operator AK dagger acting on one of our occupation number states can be an arbitrarily complicated state. Essential for the action of the operator on this state is just the occupation number, which has the same index like the operator. And applying a creation operator to this state gives the state nk plus 1. Rest is identical with a certain factor nk plus 1. And similarly, the annihilation operator factor is part of the definition. It's useful, but the most important thing is that nk is reduced by 1. Yeah. So a creation operator does nothing else than putting another particle in the one particle state k, and the annihilation operator with index k takes away one of the particles from one of the particles which are in the one particle state k. And what I haven't written down, means this is only an outlook, is for example when you apply an annihilation operator to the vacuum or to some state where no such one particle operator is present, then it's just zero, but this is a mathematical detail. In any case, it should be clear that these two operators can do something which cannot be achieved in standard wave function quantum mechanics, namely as applying a simple operator to a three-particle state gives you a four-particle state, or in the case of the annihilation operator, a two-particle state. And the mathematics is the same as for the harmonic oscillator with creation and annihilation operators. There, you don't have the index k. In a harmonic oscillator, you just have, in a certain sense, one occupation number which counts the energy quanta. And creation means you put one more energy quantum inside, or annihilation means you take one out. And here, in multiparticle physics, or also in quantum field theory, the same thing happens, and typically it means that you add a particle with a certain momentum or you take away a particle with a certain momentum. Yeah. Next item I said already, it's as in quantum mechanics with the harmonic oscillator. Now, this is something we are not going to discuss in detail. Any operator can be expressed in terms of AK and AK dagger. So not sure whether this is surprising, but at least it's probably not 100% clear immediately how you could define a Hamilton operator in terms of AK and AK dagger, or a momentum operator, whatever operator you're interested in. And this is in fact a very difficult thing, and there we would need probably a couple of lectures to understand this much better. But think maybe also back to the harmonic oscillator. Typically, when you do the Schrödinger equation, you have an operator x and p, momentum and position, and you have alternatively a creation and annihilation operator. And for the harmonic oscillator, I don't remember the prefactors in detail, but a dagger, as far as I remember, is x plus ip, and a is x minus ip. Perhaps I mixed up signs or so, but roughly it looks like that. So the only thing I want to say, going back to the very simple quantum mechanical example with one particle, you can see that you have two operators, x and p, and you can express them in terms of a and a dagger, or you can express a and a dagger in terms of x and p. And since any operator in the ordinary 1D example must be a function of x and p, you can of course express any operator also in terms of a and a dagger. And now within your Fock space, within a multiparticle system, you know, don't have only two of them, you have typically infinitely many of them, but the principle is the same. It's just a statement I'm making, but maybe this simple example helps to understand or find this statement plausible, that any operator can indeed be expressed in terms of a k and a k dagger. Yesterday, not sure whether you printed out the latest version of this script, I even added an example to make it a bit clearer. Let's consider again three particles in a box of length L in three dimensions. And here the Hamilton operator has a rather simple form, namely the following: sum over n k n square over 2m a k of n dagger a k of n, where k j of n is 2 pi over L n j. So what I didn't write in the script, so it's a fair question to everybody, even those who have printed my latest notes. So the question is now, why is this the Hamilton operator? Think a minute about it. Anyway, one of the last things, so as soon as you have solved this problem, you can go to the Sommerfest, but not before. Why is this the Hamilton operator? Yeah. Okay, so it's not a completely wrong answer, a good first attempt, but this is really, I mean, this relation that it's x plus ip, this is only for the harmonic oscillator. It's not really applicable for our system. So for a moment, ignore, it's not wrong, but don't use this expression. Rather use this one here. In, for example, my recommendation is let's think what happens when we apply our Hamilton operator to one of our occupation number states, and let's take a very simple state. Let's take, for example, a state where let's think first about one thing. What are the appropriate multiparticle states for a particle in a box, a free particle in a box? They are plane waves, right? And the plane waves can be labeled by momenta, and the momentum is quantized in this way. I think this you realize or know from the infinite potential. Well, 2 pi over L, L is the box length. You can have 1 sinus or 2 sinus or something, a multiple of these things inside. So what I wrote down here is a one particle state where we have the particle with momentum 0. And here I wrote down a one particle state where we have 1 quantum of momenta in x direction. And the question is now, apply the operator I claim is the Hamilton operator and tell me what comes out when we apply the Hamilton operator by using these things. And while you think, there was a question somewhere. Yes, it's an eigenstate. So this is a. Means this is correct what you are saying. When we here we annihilate one of them, here we create the same thing again. So when we write down a state in this occupation number representation, it does not change. This is already a good thing because they are then eigenstates to this operator, but they shouldn't only be eigenstates. The eigenvalue should be what?
The energy.
And there we need a deeper, or we need to extend your argument. And my suggestion is to do it with this example here. So maybe the first one is even too simple to see what happens, but consider this one here. I mean, what happens, for example, to the sum? Which n in the sum is the only important n? First of all, we annihilate a particle with a given momentum. Let's take the second example. When we need to sum over all momenta, when the momentum, for example, is 0 or at least not identical to this one, and when we annihilate a corresponding particle which is not even there, then we get zero. It's anyway gone. So the only term in the sum which plays a role, if the summation index n is identical to this n, which has an occupation of 1. And then happens what you said. For a moment, it's annihilated, so it goes down by 1, which is not giving 0. It gives the vacuum, omega, and then it's immediately created again. So we end up with something proportional to set state. And now we need to think a little bit in more detail. Proportional is not enough. What kind of factors do we get? The annihilation gives us, in this case, where the number is 1, just the square root of 1. And when we create it, we are at an occupation number of 0 plus 1, gives also a square root of 1. So basically, A dagger A is nothing else than 1. And then what we have is momentum squared over 2m, where the momentum is exactly the momentum which is in our state. And this is the kinetic energy of this particle. And yeah, for any one particle state, it's so here would be 0 square over 2m is 0. Here it would be k I think it's even more illustrative if I don't plug it in. It's a k actually the notation makes no sense. I wanted to denote it with the n's, with the number of quanta in each direction. So one quantum of momentum in x direction, the corresponding k, which you can obtain here, square over 2m, and so on. And now let's, for example, do 5 particles. What do we get then when we apply this operator? With a 5, exactly. So this is the reason why these strange square roots are included. Whenever you annihilate and you create one, you get exactly the occupation number back. So the essential thing is that A dagger A counts particles. And once you have understood or realized this, I think it's easy why this is a kinetic energy or the Hamilton operator of a free system, because what have I written down? Nothing else than the one particle kinetic energy times the number of particles with this energy. And we sum over all possible momenta. So we count for each momentum possible, we count the number of particles which are there and multiply it with the one particle energy. So this is certainly one of the most simple examples to write down an operator. But it's also a very common example, because as in mechanics, you have always a kinetic term. For most multiparticle systems, you have such a kinetic energy operator. But you have also more complicated ones, which we are not discussing in this lecture. So it's only a statement, more complicated operators. E.g. for particle interaction or change of particle number similar, but typically contain more than 2 AK and AK daggers. So in a certain sense, an interacting multi-particle system with non-fixed particle number usually has such a term plus another operator, for example, where 4 of these A's and A daggers are multiplied, and then you have immediately a very, very hard problem to solve. But yeah, here we could invest a lot of more time, which we do not have. Therefore, I can only recommend either to go to the quantum mechanics course in next winter, there you learn such things, or you go take a book on advanced quantum mechanics. For example, the book by Schwabel is a very complete book. When you're interested in these things, you can find it there. Yeah. This is basically everything I wanted to say about these multiparticle systems. Yeah, maybe a last comment. I always advertise quantum field theory. This might also be a bit biased, because in particle physics you're always interested in relativistic quantum mechanics, and their quantum field theory is a important thing you need to do. I think in solid state physics, or when you do ultra cold atoms like the people in the first floor, then I think this multi-particle, yeah, Hamilton operators in quantum mechanics are very useful. So the true experts here on these things are probably not the people in the second floor, but in the first floor. So don't misunderstand me. I don't want to criticize this formalism. Still, I think it's good to hear quantum field theory, because then you understand why these things look like they look, and then you could, for example, use quantum mechanics when you're not interested in relativistic systems, like I said, for perhaps solid states or ultra-cold atoms, etc. So it's certainly interesting. It's not that I didn't discuss it because it's not interesting, but I think the 2 lectures on quantum field theory which are offered contain a lot of information about this, and therefore I put the weight in this lecture clearly on other things, in particular scattering theory and symmetries, which I think are not present in any other lecture. Yeah. This is it for this semester in advanced quantum mechanics. As I said, we can discuss any questions you have, or also about the oral exam, but the official program is done.
To get like an energy information with using the Hamilton, rewriting the Hamilton operator in terms of the true ladder operator. Like, where is the physical meaning and how can I imagine that this works?
Not sure if I fully understand your question. You want to. You're asking whether there's a physical process connected with a creation and annihilation operator?
Like, besides the creation and annihilation, operator also as an annihilation of Benevoit version because they are simply the Daggett version of it. So you can use them on, like, creation on bra is annihilation on cat.
Yes.
So this is, for me, a little bit confusing because, like, when we say we create a state, this also means we can annihilate a state at the same time. And vice versa. And how is this all then connected to the energy, or why, like, the physical meaning behind why we can rewrite momentum and space operator with creation and annihilation? Like, how is it possible that when we want the mean value of, like, the position of our particle, we want to know where it is, how is it possible that we can use creation and annihilation operators to get this information?
I think it's probably not a good idea to necessarily think that the operator physically creates and annihilates something. I mean, think about this example of the Hamilton operator. It's more a mathematical tool to write A dagger A, because A dagger A, as we found out, counts the number of particles. It does not mean whenever you measure the energy that physically you destroy all particles and put them there again. In the Hamilton operator is one operator, and I mean, what I would say the only physics connection is when you measure the energy, you get the expectation value of the Hamilton operator. But thinking about in such a measurement, you whatever apply A and A dagger and so on, this is, I think, not true or correct. I mean, this is the only thing is these A and A daggers are good when we would extend this. I mean, here we found out, your colleague said it, that nothing happens. We destroy and create immediately. So basically, the combination A dagger and A is not a creation and not an annihilation. If you write more complicated operators, for example, you would formulate some interaction where two particles can go over to three particles or anything like that, where particle creation is indeed realized physically, then probably we need to write down operators which have a different number of A's and A daggers inside. And then, yeah, we would need to think about a physics observable, which gives us information whether indeed particles are created or annihilated. For example, besides the Hamilton operator, a very simple operator is the particle number operator. The particle number operator is just this thing here. The sum is there, but the energy is missing. This counts just the number of particles in the system. And for example, we could compute space somewhere. So let's define the particle number operator as sum over n, and then A kn dagger A kn, and then we could, for example, measure psi of t n psi of t, where psi is some state which we prepared at time t zero, and then use the Hamilton operator to let it evolute in time. And this thing here, for a very simple system, where we wouldn't need this formalism, it would be constant. For example, when you rewrite any of the old Hamilton operators where the particle number is fixed in terms of A's and A daggers, you will find that the number of particles where you start is the number of particles where you end. And yeah, if this is some whatever function of t, then this is a clear indication that the number of particles becomes larger or smaller, or maybe it goes up and down with time in a periodic way, that something happens. And I mean, such a thing can be measured by the experimentalist. I think, I mean, your question was about physics, and physics can or is always described in quantum theory by brackets, by expectation values of some operators inside two states. And yeah, I'm not sure whether this answers now your question, but my impression was that you wanted to understand what happens when I create or annihilate in a single operator. And this is not really a physics question, this is more mathematically. Physics is always a bracket, an expectation value, which an experimentalist could investigate.
That's okay. I don't know, but maybe I remember a way of summarizing all of that you said. It's because one of the postulates of quantum mechanics is that the observables corresponds to emission operators. Right?
Said what? Say?
The observables on nature, they correspond to
Hermitian operators, yeah.
Right? And A and A dagger alone are not emissions, are they? They are not.
Yes. I think it's hard to measure the expectation value.
Of they are not the emission, they alone are not observables.
And I think in principle one can do it. Think about the harmonic oscillator. Case again, you can measure the expectation value of a dagger just by measuring the expectation of x and of p, but the result isn't probably a complex number because you get a real result for x and a real for p, and as it's defined here, they are combined with an I. But at least it's an indication that the a's and a daggers alone are not associated with, yeah, typical quantities you're used to discuss in or use in physics.
Yes. The postulate that summarizes all that you said.
You seem not completely happy. Können auch mal länger auf Deutsch diskutieren, bei mir im Büro oder Mittagessen oder so. More practical things, maybe for the exam, everything is clear. I mean, there's only a small number of people there today, because I think at least 30 people or so registered for the exam. But I guess all of you had already oral exams, right? So it will be roughly 20 minutes or 20 minutes plus of discussion. I think I mentioned a couple of examples already. It's not like in your homework sheets. I'm not giving you some kind of assignment and tell you solve this. In 20 minutes I look at your results. There are more short questions. You still have a pen in your hand and you should write down a couple of simple equations. So just having the possibility to speak about physics but not doing any calculation is also not good enough for a really good mark. But yeah, it's probably simple things which can be done in one or at most two lines. So typically a good preparation for an oral exam is repeating the lecture, explaining it in your own words, writing down the most important things on a piece of paper. This is how the exam will happen. Also every lengthy and complicated equation which I don't remember, I don't ask. So the longer an equation is, typically, the less likely is that you need to memorize it. When a lengthy equation is important, I usually set it very explicitly. This is a central important equation, then might be a special case, but many of the things, in particular in scattering theory, don't learn the prefactors, rather learn the concepts and the crude structure of these things. This is much more important.
And if I'm not doing the exam, how can I get my shine?
So you only want to have the CPs for the tutorials. Write me an email with your name and matricul number, and then I forward it to Yelis, our secretary, and she's going to print the shine. And then you can keep it, bring it to the Prüfungsamt, whatever. Good. If there are no further issues or problems or questions, then I guess I see most of you either, what was it, 1st of August, right? Or end of September 25th or something. If you are not 100% sure, use the chance. 1st of August, 25th of September, here you can check your time if you would like to check once more. Okay, then, we are done for the semester, but I guess we'll see each other either in the exam or at some other whatever seminar, lecture, etc.